Welcome to Advices Radio Story Edition. The title of this episode is The Addictive Mind. When I first started thinking about doing this project, initially I wanted to bring on various people that had some type of a problem with drugs or alcohol and then somehow got out of that and discovered bodybuilding. It's a real common story. I'm sure that we all know a lot of people who once had a big problem with drugs or alcohol and from there got out of it, got into fitness, got into health, and, you know, found another extreme path in this world. But I didn't want to just end the story there because I feel like that's never addressing the behaviors and the mindset that started the addiction. To me, addiction is more than just the drugs and alcohol. It's a disease of the mind. It's the compulsive behaviors that force us to continue repeating something over and over again, regardless of the outcome. In a lot of cases, bodybuilding is, you know, a much more gentle alternative than, say, you know, using hardcore drugs. But still, that doesn't mean that the problem is solved. I believe that, at least for me, a lot of my addiction relates to an inability to cope with life. So bodybuilding could be a good tool to help with the abstinence of drugs, something to replace it. But I believe that to truly recover, I needed to change the way I thought. Just because I stopped using drugs doesn't mean that my life would be perfect. There's still going to be difficult decisions that need to be made, problems at work, different stresses of that nature. There's going to be relationships that end. People are going to die. I'm going to have to struggle. I mean, this is what life is about. And for me, truly changing meant learning the tools it took to cope with those problems. For myself personally, I got involved in a 12-step program, and it helped me. I truly do believe that I owe my life to that. I can honestly say if it weren't for that program, I might not be here now talking to you on this podcast. But I'm also not going to say that that's the only way. I'm not here to tell anybody that they're right or wrong. I'm not here to tell anybody what they should do with their lives. I can tell you that that's what worked for me, and that's a perspective that I'm going to bring to this podcast. But at the end of the day, if you're clean and you're happy and you're comfortable in your life, then really that's all that matters. Because this topic is so close to my heart, it really got overwhelming thinking about how many details I could dig into and how many directions this show could go. So I'm going to keep it as simple as I can, but at the same time, I just want to make note that this is just scratching the surface. There's so much more we could talk about. I guess, though, there's only so much that can be covered in a one-hour show. So with all that said, once again, I bring to you today The Addictive Mind. Enjoy the show.
Heroin, be the death of me. It's my wife, and it's my life, because a maniac to my vein leads to a sinner in my head, and then I'm better off than dead.
I've been seeing a lot of discussion online lately. There's a group of people that are claiming that addiction is not a disease, that addiction is just purely a bad choice. I even tried talking to a couple of people, trying to explain where I'm coming from, trying to explain that I identify as an addict, and I identify my addiction as being a disease that I was born with. I did make a choice. I was about 15 years old, and I had my first beer. I didn't recognize at the time the door that I was opening. I guess that I'm probably not a lot different than anybody else out there. I'm sure that a lot of people drink a beer at 15 or 16 years old. But I had a unique reaction to it, and the feeling it gave me began a lifelong obsession. By identifying as an addict, I'm not asking anybody to feel bad for me. I don't need any pity. But at the same time, I need to be aware that what was in me all those years ago is still present today. I was lucky to get out. I was lucky to find another path. Part of finding that path was recognizing that what I have in me has always been there and will always be. It's not something I can just turn on and off. I can't just have one. And for that reason, I have to remember, no matter what I'm doing, whether I'm at my own wedding or whether I'm at a party, whether I'm having a good day or a bad day, I can't have just one. That doesn't mean you can't, and I'm not saying you shouldn't, but you're not me. If you are like me, then you know this is something that we've been born with. This goes way deeper than a physical dependency. This is a disease of the mind. It can come out in a lot of ways, be it through drug use or through sex. Gambling is another popular one. For us, bodybuilding can equally become an obsession.
Bodybuilders in general have an exercise dependence, like especially professional. Like if you compete, you know, Phil Heath, Kai, you know, those, you know, true IFBB competitors, for sure they have an exercise dependence. That's their life. That's the only thing that they can see and focus on. That's how they make their money. You know, are there underlying issues of why they exercise? Of course. that's why they look in the mirror and they want to get bigger every day.
This is Matt Weick of Weick Fitness. Matt's done a great deal of research about exercise dependency.
By definition, exercise dependence is a craving for physical activity that results in extreme exercise and generates negative psychological behaviors as well as physiological symptoms. So you have, you know, overuse injuries and tolerance issues, you know, negative effects when you aren't able to exercise. So it's, you know, and I hate to use the actual term, but it is a dependency to exercise where physically and mentally you need that in your life, whether it's short term, long term. There are people who actually work out anywhere from 3 to 5 hours a day. So it varies in terms of how bad the dependency is. But regardless, there is a psychological and physiological issue that is underlying.
Interesting. So how is it determined that somebody is exercise dependent?
They literally would have to take some type of exercise dependence test. For instance, with my research, I used a U.S. version and a U.K. version. The U.S. version is the exercise dependence scale, the EDS. And then the U.K. version is the exercise dependence questionnaire, the EDQ. And it's just a whole bunch of different questions. For instance, if I were to pull it up real quick, I mean, it has anywhere from, let's see, you know, does your level of exercise make you tired at work? If you can't exercise, do you feel irritable? The rest of your life has to fit around exercise. If after an exercise session, do you feel less anxious? You exercise to look attractive. Sometimes you miss time at work to exercise. And different questions like that. So it goes from anywhere from a strong disagree to a strongly agree. And then all of that goes into account for the final result for the score of whichever test that you're looking to take. Now, the interesting thing, though, is, and we touched on this prior to the show, my research has pretty much found that there's almost a gender bias between the two testing methods. The U.S. version, the EDS, seems to show more males have an exercise dependence. And on the flip side, the U.K. version, it shows that more females have an exercise dependency. So it really shows that there's no significant correlations between the questions somehow of those two tests, even though they're testing the exact same thing. So they're thinking, and my logic is, the way that the questions are asked makes men answer a certain way and then makes females answer a different way. So that's something that we need to go back and look at and research and see if we need to somehow come up with a better testing method to show an exercise dependency.
So I'm not trying to use this show to say that exercise is a bad thing, but I would like to point out that it could be. And for myself, with the disease of addiction, it's something that I need to be aware of.
What are some of the consequences? I know you mentioned, possibly like overuse issues. What are some of the things that somebody might experience if they do have an exercise dependence?
It's really different from person to person, but I mean, in general, they all have body image issues. So, you know, it comes along with poor self-esteem. Maybe, you know, they consider themselves an outcast. They get, you know, psychiatric issues. Eating disorders can come along with that. And it all comes down to they want to feel that high that we all get after exercising, where we feel great. And, you know, while we literally are trying to crawl out of the gym after a tough session, we all just feel great that it's done. You know, what we accomplished, we feel good about. And it's their desire. They want to feel that all the time. So it's almost like a drug addiction. And I hate to compare the two because they're very drastically different. But they do have some similarities where with an exercise dependency, with that high, it's almost like a drug high where when a drug addict goes off of it or, you know, or they're coming down, they need it again. And it's the same thing with exercise dependency. And I've seen guys who they come into the gym and they're there for 5 hours. And you wonder, does this guy even work? He'll come out, he'll do an hour of cardio, and then he'll go sit in like the sauna for 30 minutes. And then he'll come out and he'll do his weights. And he'll do an hour of weight training. And then he'll go back in the sauna for 30 minutes. And then he'll leave and you're thinking, oh, okay, he's done for the day, which is still long enough. But no, he's going to a different gym to train. And we've actually, now I no longer work at this particular gym, but we literally had to cancel his membership because he was doing more harm than good.
Wow.
And he literally had 5 different memberships in just this tiny little area where I live. And he would bounce around from gym to gym. We found out he doesn't work. He was fired for the mere reason that he just wouldn't show up because he would be in the gym.
Wow.
And that's one of the signs that you obviously have an exercise dependency. But you know, it's that desire to control their body weight or their shape and the feeling of dread if they don't get in their workouts. So they have that fixation on weight loss or, you know, putting on lean mass or how many calories they burn. And to them, it's the only thing that they can think about. So they're skipping work. They're skipping class. They're missing out on plans with friends and families just so they can go work out. And it even goes to the extreme where some of these individuals, they'll literally work out to the point of pain and beyond. Now, bodybuilders, you know, that's kind of normal, but we're talking a different type of pain. Their pain is you're about to snap something, where a bodybuilder, it's that burn that we feel. And you try to, you know, get out a couple more reps. You know, you have that lactic acid in the muscle and you're trying to push harder and further and, you know, forced reps, so on and so forth. Where with them, it's beyond that. It's detrimental to their health and to what they're trying to accomplish. But there's so many different symptoms and things to look for that, I mean, we could literally probably spend a whole day on different people and what to look for.
Yeah. So the guy that you guys had to cancel his membership, did he look good? Was he jacked? Did it look like he was training that much? Or
think about the body type of a distance runner. Let's just use like in the Olympics, a Kenyan runner where they're very thin, very frail, go about 10 to 20 times worse in terms of musculature.
Wow.
And that's what the individual looked like, in the locker room. If you would have a shirt off, you would see every single rib.
Wow.
I mean, you could literally, you know, trace it all the way around to his back. It was pretty disturbing. I don't really know how to describe it other than he looked very sick.
Yeah.
And in his mind, he looked good because he's thinking that he's exercising multiple hours and this is, you know, great for him and his health is going to be improved and really it's detrimental and he's getting the negative effect of what he's doing and he doesn't realize that. So, I mean, if anybody is in that boat where you see somebody in a gym for 3, 4, 5 hours at a time and you know, they look like they're maybe 70, 80 pounds, more than likely they have a very severe exercise dependency.
So it sounds like muscle dysmorphia kind of plays a role with all of this.
Absolutely. I mean, for bodybuilders, it's kind of like bigorexia, where we want to get bigger. We want to add lean muscle mass. You know, we look in the mirror and we think, oh, man, we can definitely build up our biceps more. Or, wow, we really need to bring our calves up because they're lagging. Whereas the opposite goes with especially like women. They look at themselves and they're not thin enough. And there's actually another test that I used in my research specifically, which is the drive for thinness. Hmm. And basically that kind of shows any type of eating disorder that may take place. And for my specific research, I wanted to make sure that there was a primary exercise dependency, and if they had a secondary eating disorder, that was okay for my research because I was looking at the primary specifically. So with my research, there's maybe 3 people in the gym out of the, I think there was about 177 people that I had that participated, and about 3 of those had an eating disorder as a primary. So I had to eliminate those scores from my research.
So it sounds like we're talking about something that's really extreme here. I don't think that I've ever been that extreme with exercise, but I can say that I've taken it beyond what is healthy.
I think you kind of already covered this question. I was going to ask what are some of the contributing factors, but it sounds like we pretty much covered that one, unless you can think of anything else.
I mean, some other things would be, and I hate to say it because I think we all end up doing this to some extent, is exercising when you're sick or injured. Hmm. Now, obviously, you have guys who maybe they hurt their knee, so they only work upper body, or maybe they hurt their arm, or they tweak their shoulder, yeah, so they only do lower body. Or maybe we're sick for a week and we're like, you know what, we really just need to kind of sweat it out. So we'll go run on the treadmill a little bit. That's one of the symptoms of exercise dependency, where, you know, you will exercise when you're sick or injured. You work out alone. You isolate yourself from other people. You don't socialize with people in the gym. And I get it. You know, I myself, when I was a trainer and I worked out, I wanted to be left alone. Now, like, that didn't mean that I was exercise dependent. I just like to be in my zone. I don't like to be bothered. I want to get in and get out. But it's like they're always following kind of like the same exercise patterns day in and day out. Like there's no differentiation between, say, a Monday and a Tuesday. It's all the same. So, you know, it all comes down to a pattern, and you can see it. And the worst of them is when they're missing out on life. Hmm. When exercise is your life, and that's ultimately your dependency. Nothing else matters in your life other than exercising, and that's probably one of the key factors in exercise dependency. You kind of shut out the world. You shut out your work. You shut out your friends. You shut out your family. And literally your family becomes the gym itself and exercise, and that becomes a problem.
Hmm. Yeah, I feel like I've waxed and waned. There's been times in my life I'd say I've probably been more exercise dependent than others. But does it always have to be a bad thing? Is this something that we can manage?
I'm on the fence with that because it's kind of like saying, well, if I just do a little bit of heroin.
Yeah.
It won't be that bad, right? But exercise is it's a little bit different because we can have some type of signs of an exercise dependency and have it not go as far as a true blown dependency. Like, we've all worked out while we were sick or injured at some point. We think about our workouts. You're driving to the gym. You're thinking about your workout, or you're at work and you're like, okay, over my lunch break, I'm going to go to the gym and I'm going to get this done. You know, exercising to the point of pain is a little bit different, but for most people, it could be thrown in there. It really depends. I mean, some people, they might work out for 2 hours a day. Look at competitive bodybuilders or fitness or figure competitors where they might be doing their weights for an hour and then they'll go do like a slow, steady state cardio for an hour. So right there, they're at their 2 hours. So technically that would classify them as having an exercise dependency. And I mean, there is such a thing as a bodybuilding dependence scale. And I've had a couple friends that have looked more into that realm versus kind of the masses that I looked at. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of different things that go along with that. I mean, you have a muscle dysmorphia inventory, which is the MDI. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different tests that can look at bodybuilders and professional competitors in that light. And they literally have either a bodybuilding dependency or an exercise dependency. That's literally their life. They spend their life in their gym. They will pull away from friends and family because they have work to do. I remember when I was just getting into bodybuilding, and I would watch the DVDs that Jay Cutler would put out or Ronnie Coleman would put out. And they would always be by themselves. They would be out eating by themselves. They would go to the gym by themselves. They would go to the gym at 2 o'clock in the morning by themselves. Yeah. And they would isolate themselves from the world. And so that's kind of the extreme side of things. And then you have guys like you and I and some other people in the industry that we're in, the fitness and supplement industry, and we're kind of in the middle. I think we all have an exercise dependency, but it hasn't gotten to the point where it has real negative effects on us. It doesn't control us. We're not skipping work or, you know, kind of separating ourselves from our families because we have to go to the gym. You know, we all go to holidays with family and enjoy our time with our families and kids and stuff like that. So I would say we're kind of in the middle. We're not really extreme. And then you have guys who, like the people that are in my specific research that showed a sign of exercise dependency, but it's not as severe. Like my average age for my research with the men and women, was in their low 40s. And you know, they showed exercise dependency. So it was kind of interesting, the range of ages that showed that they had signs of an exercise dependency. Exercise dependency is very prevalent in not only in the United States, but across the world. And it just has different severities of the dependency. And it's something that we should all think about and take a look at our own personal lives. If you find yourself only thinking about your appearance and your weight and what you're going to eat, and you're separating yourselves from events and family, social gatherings and friends, and especially if it's taking you away from work and you're missing time at work because you feel that you have to be at the gym, you really need to go take a step back and maybe go talk to somebody and try and get that fixed before you kind of dig a deeper hole for yourself and you start getting the negative aspects of an exercise dependency and it changes your life and not for the better. You know, we all exercise for the health benefits, and once you go too deep into the dependency, there's really no getting out of it, because you strive for that certain feeling of when you're in the gym and that high that you get. So, you know, just take a look at the life that you live and how exercise fits in, and if it's literally everything fits around your exercise program, it's probably time to reevaluate your ultimate goals in health and fitness.
I think Matt makes a lot of really good points here, and fitness can be a really positive thing. I feel like the key is just keeping your eye on yourself, being mindful, and maintaining perspective. For me, I found that the line gets a little bit more blurry when we talk about competitive bodybuilding, because there is no room for moderation, especially toward the end. My personal decision was to take my training slow in early recovery, and when I was ready, I did begin competing, but I didn't rush into it. In a way, as an addict, I believe that my mindset actually helped me be better at bodybuilding, but it's such a fine line between being your best on stage and losing yourself. Next, I'm going to talk to my friend Ashley. She is a recovering addict just like me, and she's a competitive figure athlete. She's got an awesome physique, and she's been very successful with it so far. I want to warn you that this is a pretty intense conversation. The things that we've been through as addicts in active addiction aren't pretty, and we're going to talk about some of those things here. But the point of this isn't to dwell on the past. It's about being responsible for our disease, not just maintaining abstinence, but actually actively recovering. It's two different things. Our disease led us to the chaos of drugs, and it can lead us to chaos in so many other ways. For all of us that battle with this, it's a constant, everyday struggle.
So yeah, I'm a recovering heroin and meth addict, and everything else, I guess, under the sun.
Yeah.
I grew up with a good family, you know, dysfunctional. My parents divorced in middle school. Everything kind of went to crap after that. By the time I decided to get sober, I pretty much didn't have anything. I hadn't talked to my parents in a long time.
Hmm.
I had my daughter in the process of this. And I lost my daughter in the process of this.
I'm sorry.
So that's okay. She's with family. My mom got custody of her for a few years, and now she lives with my sister. So she's doing great. She's amazing. She's a super cool kid. I have contact with her, obviously. So it really couldn't have ended any better with the situation the way it was. But when I got sober, I had lost my daughter. And I didn't have anything. I didn't have a job. I was homeless and living on the streets pretty much.
Yeah.
I was in a women's domestic violence shelter. I was in a very abusive relationship for a few years. And my dad took me in. I was going through the court system at that time. I had some felony warrants that I got picked up for. And literally I woke up at my dad's one morning and, I was so dope sick, and I just didn't want to get out of bed. And I laid there for half a day, just sick beyond belief. And I just wanted to die. I've overdosed 15 times. So dying for me was kind of like a joke.
Yeah.
I just wanted to, but it never happened.
This part of the story is kind of heartbreaking to me. I don't know if it's because I feel bad for what she's been through or if it's because I can relate. But either way, hang in there because it gets better.
So I just laid there and finally my dad came in and yelled at me to get out of bed and I just broke down. And I told him I couldn't do it anymore. So I went into treatment the end of May 28th, 2015. 2011, I went into treatment into Brighton again, my second time there.
Did you say at Brighton?
And, yep.
I've been there twice, too.
Have you?
Yeah.
Good place.
Yeah.
It was my second time there. And when I got done with my 14 days, I knew I couldn't go back home to Kalamazoo.
Okay.
So my parents were a godsend, and they helped me financially to stay at the women's sober living house at Brighton. Nice. For about another month. And then I found a transitional home out here in Wild Lake.
Okay.
And I moved out here. I was at that house for a year and a half. And I got a job right away at El George's that I'm still at now.
Nice.
And I started working there, and I finished probation. I paid off my car. I got a car, and I went back to school.
Okay. What are you going to school for?
But I went back to school originally for social work.
Okay.
Until a year ago, I switched to, I just finished school 2 weeks ago for health and life coaching.
Nice. Well, congratulations.
So, yeah. Thank you. In September, my sobriety date in September 6th. So September, I relapsed one day.
Okay.
When I lived out here. And it was the day that I found out that my sister was going to be taking my daughter.
Okay.
So they did a permanent adoption. So that took a lot of my hope of getting her back, or really all of it. So I relapsed that day, and the second I relapsed, it just kind of hit me like a ton of bricks. I couldn't do this. And I got a sponsor. I'd kind of been, you know, half-assing the program.
Yeah.
But I got a sponsor, and I didn't have a license, so I walked the 7 a.m. meeting every morning.
You had to really want it, it sounds like.
Yeah, I did. And I met with my sponsor every day, and I started working the steps as hard as I could, and I went to work. I walked to work every night, and I wanted this more than anything in the entire world, and it really changed everything for me. You know, it wasn't easy, and it didn't happen overnight, and it was really hard. You know, like my mental obsession with using lasted so much longer than my wanting to use.
Yeah.
Like I'd be walking home from work at night, and within 3 seconds, I'd have a whole plan concocted of, when I get my license and car, I can drive back home on the weekends, and, you know, and I can get high, and then by when I come back, nobody will know, it'll be late at night. And then all of a sudden I'm like, I don't want to do that. Like my brain, though, was still wired that way.
Yeah. We don't think about the long term, you know? It's just the instant gratification of what we could do, how we could feel right now.
Exactly. You know, and learning to live life sober.
Yeah.
And feelings and thoughts and situations was hard. You know, I hadn't done that in so long. To deal with uncomfortable things sober was a completely different world that I was not expecting.
Yeah. For me, the recovery is so much more than the abstinence. And it sounds like that's a huge aspect for you too, that, you know, I could not use drugs or not drink for periods of time in my life. That didn't mean that anything about me changed, and it didn't mean I was any happier than I was before, you know?
Yep. That's exactly what it was. You know, it took me a long time to really rewire my thinking and figure out who I was. I had no idea who I was. I didn't know what I liked to do. I'm still awkward in social situations, but I was really awkward.
Yeah, me too.
And I would just stand there and stare at people because I didn't know what to do. And I was just so unhappy with myself. And being sober, the biggest thing for me was to be sober and to feel the guilt of losing my daughter. That was more painful than probably anything I've ever experienced. And that was a very long test for me. And I still, you know, I still have days that are difficult. They are spread there. Like the days, the good days between are so much longer than what they used to be.
Yeah.
But on those days, I don't go get high. I don't, you know, like I've rewired myself, and I've taught myself how to deal with these things sober. you know, by setting up this foundation. Yeah. And without that, I wouldn't be sober today.
So how does fitness and bodybuilding play into this story?
Well, I grew up, like I said, swimming competitively for probably half my life. And I started lifting in about seventh grade, okay. I think. So I had kind of my mom is very military style, good form, things like that. So I still had some of that in my brain. It had been a lot of years. After about a year of being sober and coming up with opiates, I binged on sweets a lot. I was up 100 pounds when I moved here.
Okay.
Soaking wet. So I just...
And you have a small, you know, bone structure, but you're not a small girl. You're not short. You're not little. That's nothing for you.
No, there was nothing to me. It was disgusting, to say the least. So I just... I enrolled in school, and I'd been sober about a year, and I was just kind of getting almost fidgety. I try to run a little bit at home. Running's not my thing at all. And... I got a gym membership at Planet Fitness right down the road from where I lived. And I would, until I got my car, I'd just walk there a couple times a week. And I'd kind of, you know, pick up this or try to do that. And after about 6 months of fidgeting in the gym, I wasn't really going to, like, get super fit. I was just going because it was, like, a safe place for me. I could tune things out, and if I was angry, I could go and just kind of almost process things better when I'm in the gym. And about a year into Planet Fitness, I switched over to Powerhouse in Novi, and I really started working out and doing it all on my own. And after about a year or two of that, I got really stagnant in the gym. But I became very obsessed.
Okay.
Very obsessed very quickly, and I have a habit of being completely singularly focused on something.
I think that's common, you know, for us as addicts, and you know, I think that's real common.
It's what I see as well. I completely agree, and you know, my family really noticed it. I really wouldn't do anything else. Everything was that, and until about. I did my first competition a year and a half ago, and it was after that that I knew I wanted to compete, but I knew I really needed to find a balance between competing and what I want to do with my life.
Absolutely.
You know, I was still in school, and I was transitioning from social work into health coaching and, you know, taking on this new school, and it was going to be a lot of work. And then after that, starting a business, and which I'm doing now, and you know, and to do that, I cannot be singularly focused on one thing.
Yeah.
And it was causing a lot of distress in other areas of my life. My relationship ended after my first show because of my show. Because I was never at home, and I didn't want to put I wasn't focusing on these other areas of my life, and I wasn't really seeing my family. And I would go to work, but I wasn't present at work. I was so mentally obsessed.
Yeah.
And I can't switch from one thing to another.
It's funny, you know? Because what makes us good as bodybuilders is also kind of what makes us bad, you know, as addicts.
Yes. It does. That obsession and that drive, you know, personally, I feel is very necessary to achieve the goals. You know, for me to achieve the goals that I have to put 150% into what I'm doing. But at the same time, I have to have a career.
Yeah.
And I want to have a career that I love and enjoy, and I want to help people, and I want to be there for people. And so I have to find a way to find a balance. And when I don't have, when my life is very unbalanced, even though I love that I am so focused in the gym, when I'm not in the gym, I don't feel that internal happiness and balance.
Yeah.
So for me, it's this past year has really been a growing period. to figure out what I want in life, what my next step is, and how do I balance the things that I want to achieve what I want in my entire life.
So what have you discovered as far as still being able to compete? Because you, since you did that first show, the first one was in Bikini, right?
Yes, it was.
And then from there, you moved on. You just competed in figure this year. You were anything but a bikini girl in that show. You were big. You were freaking hard. Your shoulders were capped. Your hamstrings were hard. Everything was ridiculously lean. You looked freaking great. You know, you looked really good as a figure girl. What have you learned from this experience moving forward? How are you going to find that balance in your life to be able to do that and be able to be your best at that, yet still have all these other things?
You know, that's still a work in progress. I don't have the full answer for that.
Yeah.
I'm still figuring it out. I mean, even after my last show that I did figure in, the same relationship that ended the first time ended again.
Hmm.
Kind of, you know, one of the reasons was because of my prep. Obviously, there were other things that happened, but it's hard.
What other tactics have you experimented with to try to find balance? Because I can totally relate to everything you're saying. It's hard to be the best competitor you can be and still have those other things in life. I feel like in those last 4 to 6 weeks especially, there's a certain amount of having to accept that your life is going to be out of balance. And for me, it feels scary to go back into that chaos because it feels so good. I like that living moment to moment and not having to focus on what I'm going to do next month. All I need to focus on is that show. But I know that it's going to come to an end and life is going to continue on after that contest. What are some of the things that you've been trying? If you can, I know some of this stuff isn't really, when I say tactics, it's not necessarily things that we consciously decide, okay, this is what I'm going to do. But what are some of the things you've found that have helped you find balance?
It's been, honestly, trial and error.
Okay.
'Cause I have no idea a lot of the time. I mean, I know kind of, okay, I need to incorporate these things into my life. But it's been a lot of trial and error. Okay, I tried this and it didn't work.
Yeah.
Or this mindset and it didn't work. Okay, let's try to rewire that and do something different next time. I know, like, right now in off season, I'm very focused when I'm in the gym and I make sure my food is prepped and I get enough sleep. But outside of that, every day I have a to-do list of the things I need to do, or else I do get singularly focused and I don't get anything else done, you know, and I have a business I'm starting and people I need to be there for and a job I need to be present at.
Yeah.
And to do that for me, I have to have it written in front of me. I have to have notes and reminders constantly every single day that I read to remind me of what my intentions for the day and what I need to do and what I want to get done, you know, or else I get lost. So a lot of it for me is trial and error, figuring out what works, figuring out what doesn't, and being conscious of that and very honest with myself. You know, okay, I wanted that to work. It didn't work.
Yeah.
Now I need to be honest. It really didn't work. So I need to try something else.
Because
if I just keep doing that same thing over and over again, it's not going to change. You know, just like insanity. It's not going to.
What do you see happening when, you know, you're not using drugs, obviously, you know, you're not drinking. Well, when life does go out of balance, when you find that you're focusing too much on one thing, what are the repercussions of that?
Other things start to slip. Things go by the wayside. And I get behind in life. I neglect relationships, friendships. I isolate. If I don't make a conscious effort, I have a tendency to isolate. Yeah. You know, I'm very to myself, you know, as a person to begin with. I like a lot. I need a lot of me time. That's how I recharge. But I will isolate, and that's one thing that I found with my last show. I moved out 4 weeks before my last show, and so I was living by myself. And I, other than work, I didn't see anyone. I was training out in the Ipsy gym because I was living out that way and out in Novi. And I really, you know, you're singularly focused on the show anyways.
Yeah.
But I really isolate a lot. And I remember peak week, I didn't go to the gym at all peak week. I was so lean that we just kind of tried to ride me out through that week.
Sure.
And I sat upstairs in the loft, and it hurt so bad to climb up and down the stairs.
Yeah.
My joints hurt that other than to get something to eat, because the kitchen was downstairs, I literally didn't leave the upstairs. And I didn't talk to anyone until I think Wendy actually pretty much bugged me to the point that I didn't have a choice of her coming over on show day.
Nice.
In the morning to be with me, because I didn't talk to anyone. And I remember Thursday before the show feeling very uneasy, and I didn't want to be around anyone, but I felt like it was a really bad idea that I hadn't spoken to anyone in so long, and I hadn't had human contact in so many days. I just remember the uneasiness. And so for me, I have to be aware of the isolation factor, because I'll isolate. And when I isolate, I become very unproductive.
Yeah.
And when that happens, balance in other areas of my life goes off a deep end. And then that kicks my anxiety in. When my anxiety kicks in, I isolate more. And it's like a downward spiral at that point.
Yeah.
So I know that happens if I allow it to, and I have to really be careful to catch it before it gets to that point. And I have a very close, very small, tight friend circle. And those couple of people that I keep very close to me, they're aware of that. And thank God for them, because they'll call me out on it too. And that's really helpful for me as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, I find the same thing in my life, that I can feel like I'm, in some ways, I'll feel like I'm really doing everything I can for a particular task that I'm really focused on. Sometimes I won't look at how that can be a negative thing, and I don't look at how those other things are getting pushed to the wayside. Yeah. And it doesn't matter how long it's been since I've used drugs, I know that if I continue down a path like that, if I say neglected so much in my life that I were to lose my job or lose my friends or lose my relationship with, you know, my significant other, that those are things that could compound on my life and eventually lead me back to picking something up.
Exactly. It's so easy to become obsessed with something.
With the best of intentions.
Really notice it. Well, exactly. You know, you don't have any negative intentions when it's happening. It's almost like I'm still trying to figure out that, I keep saying the word, but balance with everything, because my brain automatically is, okay, I want to do this. I put all my effort and all my focus and everything into that.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters. And because then you get it done, because you do it to the best of your ability. And that's great. But then I become obsessed with it, and I don't do anything else.
Yeah.
And other things just get completely pushed away. And I don't want my life to be like that. And so it's a constant reminder and constant checking in for me. Where am I at? What am I doing? Am I getting these other things done that I need to get done?
The awareness.
Or am I becoming obsessed with something?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's what you have on your side now is self-awareness.
Yes, exactly.
Can't stop, I need some help. Fuck you, I'm by myself. Is it a truth or a lie? It's what you can't deny. Cause it's the way you think, mixed with the pills and drink.
If there's anything I could do with this episode today, it's to let you know that if you are like Ashley and I, there is a better way. And when you find it, you got to continue to keep yourself in check. There's a lot more I would have liked to have done with this episode, but honestly, I just needed to get it out of my hair. Maybe we'll revisit it in the future. There's so much more we could talk about. There's been some major lag time between these recordings and the time that you're hearing them. Since this time, Ashley's business has launched and she's experiencing some success. You can check her out at transcendinglimitationscoaching.com. Of course, you remember Matt Weick on Advices Radio episode 39. Of course, you can reach out to him as well at weickfitness.com. I would have liked to have gotten this episode out a lot sooner, but honestly, it was very close to my heart and it was difficult to do. I'd like to dedicate this episode to all the addicts still suffering and my friends that aren't around to hear it.
The last time I saw the sun, I've got this disease, it's digging deeper in me. It's like my mind is leaving, but my heart keeps beating. So I'll paint the walls red, drip from the nose. Where it goes, nobody really knows. Hit the bottle, she's gonna follow. I fall asleep, there ain't no tomorrow. Gone so far, no one to save me. Who needs you when I got my baby? My baby's beautiful, she loves me true. And if she dies, I hope I
you
die
know
true.
I can take you straight to heaven if you let me. You know I can make your body levitate if you let me. You know that I can make your body levitate, levitate. I can make your body.
Straight back to the flask again. I can't help stop what's happening. On the wrong track, yeah, I'm back again. Up Schitt's Creek and I'm paddling. Blacked out room and I'm traveling. Good ideas, I'm liking them. I'm too fucked up, now I'm babbling. Wonder how to fix these damages. All these goddamn damages. Cover myself with bandages from all these goddamn damages. Wonder how to fix these damages. All these goddamn damages. Cover myself with bandages from all these goddamn damages.
You know, can take you straight to heaven if you let me. You know I can make your body levitate if you let me. You know that I can make your body levitate, levitate. I can make your body levitate, levitate. You know.
Voices Radio Network.